Good evening, one and all. Welcome to another Book and a Chat. Well, Wednesday, halfway through the week. I don't know why, for some reason, I could swear tomorrow was Friday. Perhaps it's just wishful thinking. But I'm sitting here thinking, oh, yes, I've got this to do Friday. And oh my God, I've got another day to go between them. But never mind. I am here, and so are my guests. Yes, not one, but two. Both authors in their own right, who've now got together for what I'm sure is going to be a new series of books. But I better introduce them. I'll introduce them one at a time. We'll talk to one at a time first, and then we'll talk to them about their new collaboration. First off on the show, I have the one and only Sarah Glenn. Hi, Sarah. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right this evening.
That's good.
How are you doing?
I'm fair to middling, I think. the thought of being on call at midnight always has me a bit, you know, how bad a night is going to be and stuff. But, but I'm here and you're here. That's the important thing. You grew up in a sort of family that gave you some strong ideals.
They did, yes. My parents were both very idealistic individuals. My father had basically got his early degrees in philosophy and religion. He participated in some of the sit-downs in North Carolina for integration during the 60s. My mother was a volunteer, and then later on she got her degree and became a social worker. When they retired, they went to the Philippines as missionaries for several years.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, so you sort of traveled a bit when you were younger with all that?
I did actually do a good bit of traveling. We've lived in a number of different places, and then also my mother was originally from Greece, and we went to Greece a couple of times, and I climbed all sorts of ruins. The first time, they took me up the ruins, and then the second time, they decided after a while they were going to go to the beach and I could climb the ruins.
I can understand that. You did, you know, interesting about the Greek side, because I think you study classical languages?
I did, and it makes me great at crosswords, trivia questions. I'm
there
good with
go.
Medical terminology, you know.
Yep. Do you know, it's funny because we at the Bristol Choral Society, we sing with sort of thing, and we've got we started doing our practicing for our Christmas show, and there's one in Latin, and I have enough. You have to read the notes until the first few rehearsals until you sort of know it, obviously, you know, so you're sight reading. And then I've got to read a foreign language as well. I have a bit of trouble with that.
I remember for a while I was in the church choir back in Kentucky, and occasionally we would do Latin, and I remember being like, well, it doesn't really translate to that, and it'd be like, shut up.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, it's like we did a Hebrew song last year, and, you know, it's got like how you pronounce it, you know, phonetically at the side of the pro. And there's this one Jewish lady saying, no, that's not said like that. You say it like this. Oh, but it's going, no, you say it like this. We had to correct all the phonetics. I know what's led you to writing. I was going to normally ask at what's the point what led you to writing, but in your case, it was a great, great aunt of yours.
Well, I come from a long line of readers. My parents were both crazy about reading, and I came along and I picked right up on it. And I had friends who had to keep me from walking in traffic because I would actually like read while I was, you know, walking to places out on the street.
And then say, you know, people having reasons and that stuff like that, but the thing that what was it that finally pushed you to write, though?
I think it's because I always hated it when the stories ended, and I just wanted them to keep going. I would go to these wonderful places. Sometimes not so wonderful places, but it was, you know, very adventuresome or whatever. And I'd be sad it was over, and I would think that nothing could be better than giving that experience to someone else, or for that matter, getting to live there permanently. There are some books that I read, and I have a great desire to actually move to the places in them. Louise Penny's Village of Three Pines, for example, is a place I would love, you know, to find. It is supposed to be up in French Canada.
Right. Well, when you did start writing, people sort of find their niche in genres and stuff like that. Yours seems to be sort of mystery and crime, I guess.
Yes, I really like puzzles. I like to read mysteries. I also really like true crime. I watch a lot of true crime, and I'll be like, "Oh, that so and so did it."
Right.
And I'm a bit of a poison enthusiast. I was the one who chose the poison for the book. You know, it's like, see, what can I use, and what are the symptoms, and how long should it take to kill them? I'm quite terrible.
I think that's great. You go out to some, yeah, you talk to somebody and say, talk about hobbies, and say, what's your hobby? Oh, poisoning.
Well, fortunately, I can't cook.
Oh, it's even worse. Right.
But I can tell you, you know, if you want them to have a terribly painful death, go for strychnine, you know.
Right. As you say, very useful in trivia. Yes. What's the best way to poison somebody so that they suffer great pain? Oh, I know. Great pain, yes. I can just imagine it. Let me speak to Gwen, if I may, now, please.
You okay? All right, hang on a second.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hi, Gwen. Welcome to the show. This is, everybody, this is the one and only, because we always have one and only, is Gwen Mayo. Gwen, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
So, you, in your own right, do more the historical type novels.
Yes.
Is that, I mean, are you one of these people, as soon as you could hold a crayon, you were jotting down little stories?
No, I actually started out telling the stories rather than writing them down.
Ah, right.
I had a younger sister that, to get her to sleep at night, I would tell her stories. And then she reached the age where she wanted me to repeat the story, so I had to start writing them down.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, I always say, people say about, you know, I'm not an author. I mean, you know, my spelling's terrible. I'm more a storyteller because, you know, that's it. And that's what a lot of authors are. It's just, as you say, they write the stories down because either the characters are telling them they have to, or so they don't forget it next time.
Yes, she would remember it.
Oh, yeah, but you said last time that person had blonde hair. Yeah, they're the worst kids.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, she dyed it. Yes.
Yes. You have to get a little creative sometimes.
Of course, you do, yeah. Oh, they lived in such and such. No, well, they moved. Yeah, they... Their father became king in a new country, and so they had to move.
Yes.
Sort of thing. But you, I know you like a lot of the historical, especially around your own native Kentucky area.
Yes. I actually majored in politics and history, and primarily Kentucky history, so I love the scandalous parts of it.
Right, and also, I guess, you know, coming from, as you said, you're telling stories to your sister and that, but being a large Irish family, and an Irish family, especially large ones, there's always lots of stories to tell about those.
Yes, there are. it's amazing. With my family, they're all crazy in different ways.
Okay. Well, I think that's good. I mean, variety, you know, so I think that's good. A variety is the spice of life. There you go. You can't have them all crazy in the same way. So, I mean, as you said, you know, you like telling the stories and that. And you're one of these people, I think it's great, and that people tell these stories that can paint a picture with words. You've got that sort of reputation that when you do, you know, tell the story, the people can picture it. And that goes right through Civil War time, doesn't it? American Civil War, is that where you cover?
I started writing the character during the Civil War, but I picked up with the novels about 14 years after the war.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, it's one of these 14 years later. See, Sarah would like that because she wants to know what happened next. She wants it to go on, and your story does go on. So that's obviously a good thing. Okay, so, I mean, what sort of books, what are the books you've written then about this historical time?
The first one was called Circle of Dishonor, which involved, the books involve a lot of the secret societies that were operating in the state after the Civil War. So the first one deals with the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Crikey, yeah, yep.
And then we got into Concealed in Ash, had to do mostly with the Red Strings and the Klan.
Right. It's interesting, Knights of the Golden Circle, a lot in the news the last 3 or 4 years, you know, Jesse James, and they were collecting the money for the new, you know, the new this, and the fact that they're still going on and everything like that. It's one of these things that seems to be in the news all the time the last half a dozen years. So what led you and Sarah to start writing together?
Well, I have such a serious tone when I'm writing. You know, it's a lot of history. It's a lot of getting into these secret societies and what was going on politically. Sarah is fun. she is the humorist of the two of us. So when we started writing this lighter series with the snowbirds, she wanted to use a character that I'd actually used in my novels.
Oh.
So as an older gentleman, the professor has retired and he's running around with his niece and her friend. So they make up the three snowbirds, and he adds, like I said, a lot of the fun aspects to it.
So let me go back to Sarah. I'll ask her about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm back.
Okay, Sarah, we're talking about, you know, what led the two of you to write together, and evidently you're taking Gwen's character and adding your humour to the book. What led you to want to use one of Gwen's characters? Was it just you just thought it would fit into something else?
No, I really liked him. I wanted, you know, I was hoping she would like put him in future books. This is the professor. He was. The thing is that he actually is fun, and he's also funny. He's very, very intelligent, and he's very used to having his own way. You know, it's not that there isn't a serious side to him, but he was just such an ebullient personality. And we had the two ladies that we had been working on writing together, and it's like, no, this guy is perfect.
Right.
Absolutely perfect. This should be, you know, the uncle. And then the three of them, you know, will travel, theoretically, you know, looking for this warm winter home, you know, to stay in and get into all kinds of stuff.
Right, I can imagine that. I mean, what was it Uncle Percival, isn't it? I think
correct.
And just the description of him, I can picture this gentleman with a sort of a mischievous smile, you know, glasses and looking over the top of his glasses, mischievous smile, always getting into trouble without even looking for it. And I'm just reading it. I think that's it. I can picture it in my mind's eye. It was that when you started reading it? Was that how you sort of said, yeah, he fit in really good in this plot?
Yes, it was just perfect because I already had a strong idea about what the characters would be like. The nurses, and I was like, no, this guy would be perfect. You know, let's get them together. This will make a great mix.
the characters, the two ladies, the nurses, are inspired by my great-great aunt. She actually served as a nurse in the First World War. And Cornelia has sort of her very upright, the upright portion of her nature, you know, the very practical and upright, and we're going to be, you know, bold and get out there and do stuff. And then Teddy has the culture and the, you know, desire to travel and more of the social skills. But they've been both drawn to a certain extent from my great-great aunt in terms of what they do. I'm not certain she would entirely have approved of what we have them do, particularly Teddy, because Teddy is a bit of a lush. Tippler, pardon me, yes.
Right.
I really liked the 20s because you have a lot of social change going on. You have a lot of adventures that characters can get into. You're starting to have some really good music. You're moving into the era of the standards and such. And I actually, Gwen and I both actually listen to a lot of standards. I have to admit, I'm very fond of Sinatra, but he's a little bit too modern for the time we're dealing with.
Right, right. Yeah, I it's funny. I was just saying I was doing my show, my music show, which is called Those Were the Days. And I go back to basically 1900 and right through to 1999, 20th century. And I always sort of pick up, like quite often pick up a big band or something like that, you know, or one of the big bands with the singers and everything. So, you still enjoy listening to that sort of stuff.
Yes. There's a couple of songs that I refer to in the book, which were written by Elmer Schobel. He's best known for, I think, Copenhagen, which is one of his pieces. But the thing is that I worked with one of his descendants.
Oh, right.
And she sort of put me on to him. And I thought, and apparently it, you know, as he, when he got older, he actually, like, retired down to the Florida area and had family here. And so it was like, oh, let's bring some of that into this because it's in the right location, right time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, if I always say, you know, you pick up some of your knowledge and some of the places you've been to. And I think, I'm not sure which one of you, but in the book, in your new book, The Murder on the Mullet Express, there's also sort of a links between law enforcement, isn't there, as well? And that, and I think one of you, didn't you used to work for something like that?
That would have been me. I worked for about 7 years at reports desk, basically taking in the police reports of various crimes, traffic tickets, etc., in Lexington, Kentucky. And really, with some of the stories I had from that, I could probably have done stand-up. I mean, some of the stuff is really
funny. I can believe it. Yeah, I can believe it. And they say, they always say, truth stranger in fiction. And it is in so many cases. When you came to, actually, can I let me talk back to Gwen, if
okay.
I may.
Okay, all
Sorry
right.
To keep
Hang
you swapping,
on.
But I'm trying to get you both on.
Hello again.
Hiya, Gwen. When you came to writing, I mean, you know, and Sarah approached you about, you know, she got this story bits, and you sort of worked out between the character, Uncle Percival, and that. How did you set about writing together? Did you sort of plot it between you or take a chapter each, or how did you work?
Sarah's not a plotter.
Right.
she's a pantser. She just writes as she goes, and we'll do scenes that are halfway through the book and then go back and do something early in the book. And it would drive me crazy to try to do that.
And yet you still managed to write together.
Yes, we did. But we did make an agreement as we started working on the second book that if she changed something in my plot line, she had to go back and enter it into the outline.
Now, see, how can you do that? See, I agree with Sarah, because as we have on the show lots of times, we, you know, we say no matter how detailed you make a plot, the characters come along and, you know, lead you down different paths. Minor characters will make, you know, more of a role, and sometimes even demand their own book. I mean, I can't understand how, to me, the characters are always in the back of my head saying, well, you've got to do this and hurry up and finish with this person. You've got to tell my story now. I suppose you detail it so your plot is so strict that these people can't do that to you.
No. The plot changes as we go along.
Okay.
And it always changes. But what doesn't change is that central puzzle that I've worked out.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's the big thing. But that's the big thing, isn't it? The with a murder mystery like this, like Murder on the Mullet Express, and this is just book one, by the way, The Three Snowbirds. It's the puzzle, isn't it? You stick somebody in a situation, and they've got to get out of it, and you've worked out what the puzzle is, and they've got to work it out in the book.
Right, and you know, if you read our books, everything that the characters know is there so that the reader can follow it if they can put it together. And hopefully we're clever enough that they don't put it together until after they get to the end of the book. So I like surprising people, but...
Oh, you've got to have twists. You've got to have this. Yeah, it's the big thing that keep the people turning the page, because they think they've solved it, you know, at the halfway through chapter two. Oh, nope, that person's disappeared. Can't be them. Never the butler.
They think they've solved it, but then you kill that person off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Looking at the reviews you've got, it seems like a lot of people like the book as well. Yeah, and the format you've done it like that.
Yes, so far everybody who's read it, you know, has been pretty positive. I think I had one negative review, and the person simply didn't like the time period and the way we'd done it. They were, mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, it wasn't their cup of tea. You know, if 50 people yep. had said it'd be different, but, you know, one person didn't particularly like it.
There's always somebody.
Yeah.
When you came to the time period, did you have to do, you know, did you have to do a lot of homework on the time period?
Well, Sarah is a big gamer, so she knew the 20s pretty well from playing Call of Cthulhu.
Ah, right.
but yeah, I had to do a lot of historical research, and of course, what I found fun was that I would do the historical research on what was there, what wasn't there, and, you know, all of the layout of the land and drive the streets and that kind of stuff. Sarah loved the pop culture aspects of it. You know.
Right.
This is why we have tins of Oreos and, you know, the face creams that she uses and the little devices that help them get the bow lips.
Right.
All of that is okay. Her research.
Full of research, right? Now, apart from Sarah changing the plot all the time, what was the hardest part writing together?
I think that was the hardest part of writing together. at one point in the book, I had not read something she had changed like four or five chapters on. Where she was writing
right.
the scene, and I didn't know she'd made a change. So we had to sit down and go, okay, whose version are we going to go with and why? And we had to discuss them a few times, too, to figure out, you know, which version of this and what was the reasoning behind how it should happen.
Right. Can I speak back to Sarah, please, Gwen? Thank you.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, so Sarah, so Gwen's blaming you basically for everything, changing the
of
plot.
Of course, she's blaming me, yes.
And stuff like that. You know, just because, I mean, I can imagine, I had a lady once on the show, a historical writer, historical romance writer, and we were talking about, you know, the plotting and stuff like that, and she was saying that the whole of her wall had little sticky notes on about her books, that this one had a relation with this one, and this one was a divorced cousin of that, and they had an affair, you know, and she used to sit down, book 25, now where's that character, and she's literally have it all over the wall. I go mad doing something like that.
Actually, I understand where she's coming from. The I had a novel that came out. I'm afraid that it was a small press that eventually folded, but it had to do with a vampire who moved into a gated community to protect her family from vampire hunters, and then she gets into a big fight with the homeowners association.
Right.
Okay, and I had trouble with it because it's very important to know when sunset is. She was also an astronomy professor, so I had to know the academic year, and I wound up having a bunch of scenes, and eventually what I did was I printed out a calendar, and then I used Post-its to put the scenes so I could figure out when did this happen. You know, when does daylight savings time end, which was very important to her because she suddenly got an hour of night time back. And such.
Unless of course they move to the other coast or something.
I think that I could probably write a story at some point, maybe I will, about a migrating vampire, you know, who goes to places where it's, you know, nighttime a lot. Like Alaska.
Yeah. I was going to say, it ends up in Alaska, yeah, until they realize that in the summer it's sunny.
Yeah,
it's sunny,
they have to move
it's
south.
Daylight.
Yeah, but that's the downside.
Well, there, I tell you what, ladies, there has been no downside to this show. It's been great fun chatting to you both.
Well, thank
you. What I'm going to do now is hand the show over to one or both of you, whoever wants to do it, so that you can tell everybody where they can find out more about your books and, of course, your new joint book.
Okay. Well, my stuff can be found at sarahglenn.com. That's SARAHGLENN.com. It lists my writings, including the various short stories I've done. I'm in the process of trying to re-release the first book, since you can do that now, and it's been a number of years, but since you're dead already, it doesn't matter as much with a vampire. You can find Gwen's writing at gwenmayo.com. That's GWENMAYO.com. You can find out about her writings. And if the stuff that we do together is humorous. Her stories set post-Civil War in Kentucky are, shall we say, a bit grittier. They're actually kind of a bit more noir. In the first book, you know, you have the bottle of bourbon, you have the hooker with the heart of gold, you have, you know, all that stuff. And, of course, you can find our writings on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and about any place you want to look for an electronic format, you can find it. It's a marvelous thing, the Kindle. It has saved me so much space in terms of, I can try books and then I don't have to buy a new shelf. For them.
Right, I fully understand. And I better speak quickly to Gwen.
Okay.
Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, thank you. Hello.
Hi, Gwen. Where will we find out more about you and your books?
At gwenmayo.com. Pretty much you can find our books anywhere. If your local bookstore doesn't stock them, you can always ask them to order it because they are available through Ingram as well. And I love the independent bookstores, so I have to put in a plug for them.
Okay. Well, ladies, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. It's been great chatting to you. Good luck with the new book, Murder on the Mullet Express, Snowbirds, The Three Snowbirds, which is book one. I'm sure, as you said, there's another one on the way, and I'm sure it's going to be a great series. Thank you so much for being on the show
today. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guests today, not one but two, Sarah E. Glenn and as they said, you can find them on their own webpage, and also the new book written by them both called Murder on the Mullet Express. And the first book is called, that's the series, I believe, and the first book is called The Three Snowbirds Book One. Look out for it. Looks like it's going to be a mystery with a bit of fun in it, and, well, I think you'll enjoy it anyway. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back on Sunday. Until then, as always, I've got one thing left to say.